back 2-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. He's three outs away from career win number 99.
R.A. Dickey striking out Abraham Almonte for the final out of a perfect eighth inning, which followed a perfect seventh inning, which followed a perfect sixth inning, which followed a perfect fifth inning. The only inning in which R.A. Dickey did not face the minimum was the fourth, in which he gave up a run on three hits. At the time, the Blue Jays already had a 5-0 lead. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk, and we're taking your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Another win for the Blue Jays. They were 21-6 in the month of August. They are 2-0 in the month of September. But what's interesting is that not too many people are going to be talking about this win tonight. This was, you know, kind of a run-of-the-mill, yeah. Blue Jays win, they win a series, and all of those things. Marcus Stroman pitched in Lansing tonight. Marcus Stroman, who we thought his season was over in April, or March, pardon me, in spring training, when he tore his ACL in his knee, but he has rehabbed, and he was back on a mound for the first time in a real game tonight, pitching in Lansing for the Lugnuts, who lost 7-4 to the Great Lakes Loons, all those seven runs coming in the ninth inning. Stroman pitched 4 2/3 innings of no-hitter with one walk and with seven strikeouts. And a few people from the Blue Jays front office were there, including special advisor Pat Henkin. You might remember him, and Pat joins us now. And first of all, thanks so much. Last minute, I really do appreciate it, Pat.
No, no problem. Good to be on. What's going on?
Oh, you know, 76-57, game and a half lead in the East. No big deal.
Yeah, right.
How did Stroman look to you tonight?
He looked good. I mean, I watched him warm up, and he looked good when the game started. His fastball's a little bit, you know, in the zone. He was kind of wild in the zone. But he threw a lot of strikes. His slider had really good bite. He threw it a few times behind in the count, really jelly-legged some of the hitters at that level. He threw some really good first-pitch change-ups. He had really good bite and finish on his breaking ball. And, you know, he's got such good feel and command. He's so athletic, you know. I think the one thing was the beginning of the game, his tempo was up a little, maybe a little bit of adrenaline, a little bit of excitement. But other than that, he looked great, man. I was pretty impressed.
How surprised are you that this is even happening right now? I mean, you saw it in the spring. You saw how down everybody was and how people were just assuming that he wasn't coming back this year.
You know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, this guy has just got the heart the size of a dome. He's got guts that go with it. He's got athleticism, and you know, he just repeats that rhythmic delivery. I'm not really surprised. I know I looked at the medicals, or I've heard all the people and I've read about it, about how he was going to come back in September, but it might be a little bit of a rush. But I think there's some other guys. I was watching the game with Perry today, and he was mentioning to me about Gallardo, the starting pitcher for the Rangers.
Yep.
Had a similar injury and came back and pitched in September. I'm pronouncing his name.
Yeah, Giovanni Gallardo.
Yeah, Gallardo, thank you. Yeah, I guess he had the same type of injury in April. So Stroh had it actually before April, so he looked good.
It is an amazing thing that this is happening. We're talking to Pat Henkin. How much, I mean, like you said, he gave some of the hitters a jelly leg, but at that level, these are low A-ball hitters. So does it even matter what the final line totals were for Stroman that he threw, that he didn't give up a hit, that he had seven strikeouts and one walk? Or are you far more concerned about the other stuff you were talking about, the life on his pitches, the bite on his breaking stuff, and his command?
Yeah, he had really good life on his ball and breaking ball, had good snap. His changeup was good. I think the thing that's going to come and get a little bit better was his fastball command. He was in the strike zone. Like I said earlier, he's kind of wild in the zone. But when he got two strikes on guys, he's got that knack of just making that pitch, that good pitcher's pitch that's on the corner and catching guys looking. You know, I think he went three balls, maybe twice, maybe three times at the most. So he was throwing strikes, getting ahead. I mean, like I said, he yanked a couple fastballs glove side, but overall, I thought he did really well. And for the first game to be under lights, you know, at 7 o'clock, pitching at night with the lights on, the stadium, the crowd, and the atmosphere, it was. I thought he did really well. I really did. I think that 4 days from now, he's scheduled to pitch again on his fifth day. You know, I'm looking for an improvement, but he threw really well. I don't really get caught up in the numbers. You're right, it's eight ball. And, you know, he's striking guys out, throwing his breaking ball a little bit behind in the count and fooling guys. But overall, everybody should be really happy. I was excited. I think Barry was too. So it was fun. It was a good day for the Jays. And then we win in Toronto. Dickey throws a great game. So it was win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about Perry Manassian, who was there with you from the Jays front office. I'm trying to keep in perspective, Pat, that Marcus Stroman, as great as he looks and as fantastic as his stuff is, this is a guy who's 24 years old and who's had 20 starts in the major leagues. But then I'm reminded, as I talk to you, of a guy who was 24 years old and had 30 starts in the major leagues when he pitched in his first September as a starter in the bigs and then went on to pitch in the World Series. So quite obviously, you've shown that this kind of thing can be done.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. And he doesn't have the mileage on his arm this year. So September's always one of the toughest months to pitch. There's no question. You can ask Burley or Dickey that, guys that have been around, David Price, guys like that. And it's always been a tough month, but if you're mentally strong and you're ready to compete, you know, I used to tell the guys in the bullpen, if you think you're tired in September, what are you going to feel like in October? You know, I want to play an extra month. So I always kind of looked at it that way. So yeah, Stroman's fine. He's full of power and he's full of athleticism, and it was a good day today.
We're with Pat Henken, and what was it like for you, Pat, pitching in that first September as a 24-year-old in your first full season in the major leagues?
You know, I threw a lot of innings in the minor leagues coming up. I spent five full seasons in the minor leagues with 150 innings in each season. So I kind of was, I don't want to say educated more about it, but I just was ready for it mentally. I never really looked at it like I was tired in September. I got a little bit more tired as I got older and started logging the innings. But I really truly think it's kind of a state of mind. It's a mental thing. I think you just got to grind through it. I didn't really have any problems with it. I mean, gosh, if you can't pitch in September in a pennant race, then you might as well take it to the house.
But aren't there a lot of guys, I mean, you know, it seems like, and I've always thought of you sort of as one of those special people as far as mental fortitude goes. You want the ball in your hands, you want the challenge, and you're daring people to get hits off of you. But aren't there some young guys in that spotlight for the first time as a young man in a pennant race like you were in 1993? Some guys can't handle that as easily. Not that I'm doubting Stroman's mental fortitude either, but I mean, you guys aren't like normal people.
Well, you know, you got to remember, I mean, big league season's an extra month. And, you know, Stroman pitched in September last year.
Yep.
Hutchinson's done it. Obviously, the big three with and Marco Estrada, too, they've all done it. So I'm not really overly concerned about it. I was more looking at Stroh's stuff. I was looking at the ball coming out of his hand, how the hitter was reacting. I really wasn't looking at, like, the overall numbers, 4 2/3, no hits, 7 strikeouts. If I had to guess, I was going to say he had, like, 5 until I saw the box score after the game. I thought, oh, wow, he struck out 7, did he? You know, so, I mean, I really wasn't caught up in that. I was more looking at the spin on the ball and just the life on his fastball, and he had it. I mean, the guy can spin the ball, as we all know. So it was a good day. Like I said, I keep repeating myself, but it was a good day.
Did you keep an eye on him on that last play? Is the last out he got was a grounder to first where he had to go over and cover?
I did. I actually made a note of that. Yeah, he did. He had to run over there. He didn't actually have to cover. I think the first baseman took it himself, but he popped off the mound good. I didn't see any favoritism at all with the knee at all. So that was great.
Yeah, that is great. All right, we got Pat Henken with us. I'll keep you for one more question maybe two, but one more Stroman question. And that is, obviously it's not up to you, but if it were, would you put this guy in a big league starting rotation if he goes out there in AAA on Labor Day and does this again?
That's a tough question. You can put me on the spot, boy. I mean, you got to see him pitch against the higher level. You know, I think the next start against AAA or AA, wherever they decide to pitch him, I think it'll be a better telltale sign of whether or not he can step right in like that. Big leagues is a great league, as you well know. You know, that's why the old cliche, it's tough, easy to get there, hard to stay. A lot of truth to that. Matter of fact, my daughter always corrects me, Dad, you're wrong. It's hard to get there and hard to stay.
That's right.
You're right.
Hard to get there,
friend,
and harder to stay.
That one. You know that? That's an Alex Anthopoulos question, my friend.
Yeah, that too. John Gibbons as well. All right, so now the last thing I have for you is that, I mean, this is something else, what's going on in Toronto right now with the Blue Jays. And going into this game at 75-57, that's the same record after 132 games that your 92-93 Blue Jays had. Obviously, we know what those teams did, and we know how big a part of it you were, especially in 1993. How does it feel for you to watch this again, to see this place sold out every night again, to see the fans getting into it? What's it like for someone who went through it the first time on the field?
You know, it's awesome. I got to tell you, the opening day of 11, I was a bullpen coach, and Ricky Romero was starting, and he looked at me and he said, "It was like this all the time." I said, "All the time. When I broke in, it was like 4 or 5 years where we sold out. It was like this every game." This is an electric crowd. I mean, a great sports town. So it's just been fantastic to watch. I got to tell you, man, this team is playing on a mission right now. They've been doing a great job, and it's been fun. I mean, I know you're seeing it every day. You're living it. And I know all the fans are, too. So I'm excited for the fans. It's a long coming, and it's been great. I mean, I got to tell you, this team, they're playing great. I said it earlier, and I said it the other day. You know, there's a difference between believing and hope mode, and this team is just – they know they're good. I mean, it's like, who's going to be a hero tonight? Let's win another one. And it's just been great.
It really has. And like Mark Burley says, they come to the ballpark every day saying, whose butt are we going to kick tonight? And that's the way this team is playing right now. And again, now 76-57, same record after 133 games as the 92-93 Blue Jays. A great portent, one hopes, for a wonderful October. Pat, thank you so much for this. Always appreciate your insight, and great to have that the eyewitness view of Marcus Stroman's outing tonight. Can't wait to see you the next time you're up here in Toronto.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right, there he is. Pat Henkin, one of the Blue Jays' all-time greats, and he was down there with Perry Manassian watching Marcus Stroman pitch tonight. And again, Marcus Stroman for the Lansing Lugnuts. 4 2/3 no-hit innings, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. He threw 69 pitches, 44 of them were strikes. He will start for the Buffalo Bisons in Pawtucket on Labor Day in their season finale. And then he's coming to the Blue Jays. And he'll be here on Friday to throw a bullpen. So hopefully we'll get the chance to talk to him about that outing in Lansing, about how he's feeling, and we've talked to him here before, and he said... unequivocally, every time we talk to him, I will be pitching in September, and I will be starting for the Blue Jays in September, and boy, does it ever look like that's going to be the case. Blue Jays beat the Indians 5-1. It's Blue Jays Talk. I'm Mike Wilner. We'll get to John Gibbons in a second. We'll get a couple of calls in first. Let's start with Daniel in New York City. You've been holding for a while. Thanks, Daniel. Welcome aboard.
My pleasure. Just want to start with a quick Blue Jays Twitter note. LaTroy Hawkins just posted a great pic on Twitter that the Blue Jays retweeted of him icing down his shoulder, sitting next to Ari Dickey in the trainer's room. And Ari Dickey basically looks like he just walked in from the park. And it's just a really funny photo because he says this guy threw a complete game and all that. And all LaTroy threw was a bullpen session. It's just a really funny picture.
So we will check it out. Make sure you check it out if you're not following LaTroy Hawkins on Twitter. He posted it 10 minutes ago, at LaTroy Hawkins 32, with an Instagram picture. He's got the ice on it, and there's the trainer, George Poulos, and R.A. Dickey, like you said, looking like a walk in the park. And you know what? That brings back memories for me of 1991 when Tom Candiotti was here. And in the clubhouse after game, Candiotti pitched, I remember Joe Carter just making fun of him after the game, saying, "You didn't do any work tonight. What the heck was that?" And he probably had just thrown a complete game that night, too.
So that was the first one. The other one is I caught a little mistake when you were describing what Josh Donaldson did with that slide. It actually wasn't a slide. It was a leap. He didn't actually touch the ground with anything but with his body until after he touched the plate.
Yeah, he supermanned it. It's true.
Full Superman. So
it's still called a slide, though.
I think the Willie Mays Hayes guarantee of not sliding to the catcher is going to be in the real world. So that was pretty cool. And what I want to say about Donaldson is, as much as he's been impressing all year, consistency and power and all of the numbers and everything, today was really the first day where I just kept looking at him saying, wow, between the tag-up play and the and that stretching into a double play on the lax throw-in. And I submit that one of the reasons, other than it was the right opportunity and all that, he even pushed it, and he hasn't done that before this year, is because he probably got a little grief from Gibby the other day about the bunt, and he basically wanted to show, look, I got some legs. You know, trust me, Skip, I'll take it from here. And I think that might have been just in the back of his head as some of the inspiration to even try both of those plays.
I doubt it, because I don't think him putting a bad bunt down had anything to do with a lack of speed. If he'd managed to get it past the pitcher, then he would have reached a couple of nights ago. It was just a bad idea. You don't want Josh Donaldson doing that unless the situation is just screaming for it, where everybody's playing way back and all he has to do is get the ball on the ground to get a hit. But I just think that that's the kind of player he is. He is definitely a risk taker. And he took two major risks tonight, and they both paid off. And for the most part, it's been paying off most of the year. Thank you for the call, Daniel. Appreciate it. Josh Donaldson, 3-for-4 with 3 doubles. He tagged and scored on a Troy Tulowitzki pop-up to shallow center that was caught by the second baseman, and that was a Superman dive that Daniel was talking about. And he also had a hustle double in the fourth when he hit a line drive to left and Michael Brantley had to go to his right and in a bit to get it. And Donaldson rounded the bag hard, stopped about a third of the way to second, and then saw Brantley kind of just lollygag, casual, nothing throw. And he reaccelerated and slid in ahead of the throw that bounced away. Just a tremendous job by Josh Donaldson. Neil is in Calgary listening on the Fan 960. Hello, Neil.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. First off, thanks to you and your producers for taking my call. My girlfriend absolutely hates me watching baseball, and for me being on national radio even drives her more nuts.
You got to educate her, man. It's a beautiful game.
Oh, yes, sir. So anyways, here it is. My question is, with Ryan Goins,
yep.
Never mind his little bit of offensive. Yeah, he's coming around offensively.
Yeah.
But that guy's defense is insane. Everybody
yes.
knows it.
Yes.
So with a healthy Travis, no matter when it is, this year, next year, whenever, does Goins get that spot or what?
It's a great problem to have, isn't it?
Well, obviously. That's like the best problem you could ever have.
Yeah.
But I almost feel bad for Travis because Goins is playing so good. How can Travis get his spot?
You know what? I kind of feel the same. I love Devin Travis. I think that Devin Travis is such a good hitter. And while he's not Ryan Goins defensively, he is a good defensive second baseman, and he deserves to play. But if it's this Ryan Goins, if it's the Ryan Goins who has a 400 on base and he's doing all these things defensively, and Goins on base is over 400 since August 1st, then he has to play. And so maybe Devin Travis is in the same spot that he was in Detroit, where he's got to play the outfield. And maybe you spend the spring teaching Devin Travis to play left field. I think that's a little too drastic to talk about right now. But yeah, you have two guys who are young and great and both deserve to be playing second base every day. The only difference is, the Travis is younger, and he's been doing it offensively for a lot longer than Ryan Goins has. But Ryan Goins is going to have the opportunity to see if he can carry this through September and hopefully October as well.
Well, no, that's totally my point, though. If he carries it through,
but who knows?
Never mind.
Let's watch.
Training. I mean, is it Travis's job to keep, or is it Goins' job to lose?
Let's see what happens. The only thing we can do is see what happens. None of those decisions are going to be made on September 2nd by any means. Who knows? But it is, like I said, a wonderful, wonderful problem to have. Thanks for the call, Neil. We will continue to take your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. John Gibbons coming up. But first, Dwayne in Salt Lake City. Hey, Dwayne.
How you doing, Mike?
Doing all right. How's Utah?
Beer night on the way to Nevada.
Oh, lovely.
Anyways, yeah. I caught the game tonight on the internet, but I'm glad you guys are still selling out down there. That's wonderful. Mike, I sure wish you would have took my call last night. I would have been really, really, really happy to say hi to John McDonald. I'm one of his biggest fans, and I have lots of memories of him.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We only got to two calls last night just because there was so much I wanted to talk to John McDonald about, and he wasn't exactly being brief with his answers, but he was being great. So I just kind of wanted to keep going. So I apologize for not getting as many people in on the conversation last night, but hopefully you all enjoyed it with Johnny Mack anyway.
Yeah, he's excellent. Just full of information, really just letting it go. That was great. I listened to the podcast again twice today, so that's how much I liked it.
Wow.
But anyways, the purpose of my phone call, remember I called you back there in mid-June of this year when the Blue Jays were like five games under?
I can't say I do. I get a lot of these phone calls. No offense.
Oh, okay. No. But yeah, I was a firm believer back then that this is a very special team. And as it is, it turned out that way. That's wonderful for all of us. What I wanted to call about was Alex Anthopoulos' perfect five-year plan and how hindsight is 2020 now. Now that we look back over the 5 years, how he put this team together and how last year wasn't the time to make the move, whether he didn't have the assets or whether the players that he wanted, like he wanted to put in place a catcher and a third baseman before he made the big trigger move on July 31st. So last year wasn't the time to do it in his plan. It wasn't about money. It was about the plan.
I don't know if it was about the plan. I think it was about the way the team was playing and the asking prices for a lot of the assets that were out there available in trade. I mean, last July, when Alex Anthopoulos went fishing at the trade deadline, people were asking for Marcus Stroman. They were asking for Aaron Sanchez. And those were people that he wasn't comfortable giving up, especially with the Blue Jays having not played well the 5 weeks leading up to the trade deadline or the 6 weeks leading up to the trade deadline. I think that had more to do with it than anything else.
Yeah, you're right, but anyways, so glad to hear the team's doing well, and I can't wait to get back home, back in Toronto, maybe go down and see them live. You take care.
All right, well, you better call and get your tickets now, because there really are not many available for any of the remaining home games this season. The Orioles series coming up this weekend is sold out completely, but we're told that you should probably check back after noon on Friday to see if any singles that the Blue Jays or Orioles players aren't using get opened up onto the market. That's pretty much the only way you're going to get tickets for this weekend series. And then it's the Red Sox, Yankees, and the last three home games of the regular season against the Rays in the next homestand. So 12 home games left, and really probably just a handful of tickets available. So if you want to come down to a game, get to buying those tickets forthwith. More of your calls coming up as we continue on Blue Jays Talk, but first, let's give a listen to the skipper. Blue Jays beat the Indians 5-1, and here's what John Gibbons had to say about it.
John, for a lot of this season, you had to wonder whether they were ever going to score some runs for Ari Adichie. It seems to have paid off over these last nine starts.
Yeah, Kenny, yeah. He's, definitely early on, he was that one guy, and there's always seems to be that one guy. But that has flipped now. But in reality, he hasn't needed a whole lot either. I mean, he's been on that nice little roll too. We've had a number of guys that are on those roles, and one thing, it makes it tough though. I mean, you're the one guy who goes out there and you get those nail biters, those tight games, and his record I think is a little bit deceiving how well he's pitched, but he's doing it now. And, I mean, we really needed him tonight. Our bullpen was some guys down tonight. So, to go nine innings this late in the year, I mean, that doesn't happen too often. So, tip my hat to him. But there was, Donaldson had a big day. We did a lot of good things, but we're playing good baseball.
John, we've obviously talked a lot this year about Donaldson's bat and his glove, and that was there tonight as well. But his legs kind of became a story tonight, too. What did you think of that play where he ran home from on that pop fly?
Well, he's a madman, you know. I mean, that's a great play. You don't see that, you know, but the second baseman, he heads out, you know, and he's backpedaling a little bit. You know, it's an aggressive play. You know, I mean, you see that more out of your flyers, you know, your speed guys. And, you know, of course, anyone he took second base on the ball to left field, too. So he's on a mission. You know, hopefully he rests tomorrow. He probably uses a day off. But, I mean, I don't know how you sum up his year. I mean, he's at the top of just about every category there is. And it's fun to watch. You know, it's fun to be a part of.
Gibby, with baseball being a daily grind, is it harder for Donaldson to maintain that daily level of intensity than he makes it look?
Well, yeah, I would think so, but I haven't seen a let-up in, you know, I can't recall really this year a down day for him. You know, I'm not talking about production. I'm just talking about where he looks gassed sitting there in the dugout between innings, anything like that. You know, he's highly motivated. I think he's one of those guys that I know he's one of those guys that always has something to prove. You know, he started out as a catcher. He was kind of, you know, it took him a while to get there and really get his opportunity and explode like he is now. So I don't think he takes anything for granted. And I mean, he can feel it. You know, he loves. You know, he was excited to come play for this. You know, this team. You know, he was playing out in that graveyard out there in Oakland. Now he's in a great hitting park, and he's taking advantage of it. But, yeah, really, honestly, I can't remember seeing a game all year where he looks fatigued. I know he is, but, you know, he pushes himself through that.
Gibby, I know you weren't able to watch Stroman tonight, but 4 2/3, 7 strikeouts, no hits. I mean, is he just continuing to kind of defy the odds and prove with every time he pitches that, you know, he could be a part of this come stretch time?
Yeah, I heard it was a good outing. You know, you figure he's going to dominate some A-ball kids. That's not taking anything away from him. But, you know, I think the fact that he felt great, apparently he was throwing strikes, it's a great sign. Now he'll move on to Buffalo in 5 days, and we'll just kind of evaluate when that's over.
Dickey seems to pitch better in the second half of the season than the first. Like, he pitches better as the season goes on. Is there something about him, his pitch, the weather? Is there something about that?
Yeah, I don't know, but you're right. You know, I've noticed that too. I can't answer that. You know, he might be able to answer that. You know, somebody was asking me before the game about Tolley, you know, and about the 2-run difference when he's catching versus Russ. You know, I don't know where that guy is, but Tolley was pretty good with him tonight. You know, so, but I've got no idea. You know, it's just maybe when it gets hot, it heats up. I think the humidity and stuff does help throwing that pitch. So maybe that's it. But, you know, I mean, he's not a young guy, so you would almost think just the opposite. You know, even though he's throwing a knuckleball, you think a little more fatigue would set in. But I don't know. Ask him. I couldn't tell you.
John Gibbons, not a meteorologist, trying to figure out the effect of whatever on the knuckleball. Nobody knows, but R.A. Dickey has gotten off to a rough start a couple of seasons in a row for the Blue Jays, and he has been spectacular lately, pretty much since the end of May. But 7-0 since the All-Star break, first Blue Jays pitcher to do that since Roger Clemens did it in 1998. Clemens wound up 11-0 to finish the season, winning his second Cy Young Award in as many seasons as a Toronto Blue Jay before he demanded a trade, and, well, they traded him. Dickey was 3-10. Now he is 10-10, and he was almost perfect tonight. 3 up, 3 down in 7 of his 9 innings, faced the minimum in another one, and gave up a run on 3 hits in the fourth. The Blue Jays beat the Cleveland Indians by a score of 5-1. I'm Mike Wilner. Blue Jays talk continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Delivery. Line drive deep left field. That ball's heading for the bullpen. It is up, and crashes off the wall. Base hit around third, heading home. Josh Tolley. Here's Revere. Hit first flat. He scores as well on a double by Donaldson.
Just another piece of a huge day for Josh Donaldson, who goes 3-for-4 with that double, another double, a single, 3 RBIs and 2 runs scored. And the second run he scored is the one everybody's going to be talking about tonight and tomorrow, going flying in full Superman on Troy Tulowitzki's sacrifice fly. It was a pop-up to shallow center field caught by the Indians' second baseman, Jason Kipnis. And Donaldson, the risk-taker, the playmaker, dared Kipnis to make a good strong throw while he was backpedaling and just beat it with a phenomenal dive home. Also tonight, besides the 5-1 win for the Blue Jays and the incredible performance by R.A. Dickey, in which he was perfect in 7 of 9 innings and almost an eighth, goes the route on a 92-pitch complete game. Marcus Stroman makes his first rehab start. 4 2/3 innings of no-hitter at Lansing. 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, 69 pitches. He will start for the Buffalo Bisons in Pawtucket on Labor Day. And you know what? The Blue Jays are in Boston on Labor Day and the Tuesday and Wednesday that follows. So Stroman will just make that short little drive to Fenway Park and join the Blue Jays on September 8th, perhaps in preparation for a September 12th start at Yankee Stadium. And what an incredible comeback story that would be. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your phone calls right up to the top of the hour here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Jays remain a game and a half up on the New York Yankees for first place in the American League East. Mitch is in Markham. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
All right, sir. Go ahead.
So I just want to touch base with you because this marks the game where we have to have a below 500 record, 14-15, to close out in order to hit 90 wins, which is the first time that we would hit that mark since the 92-93 seasons. And I just think that's absolutely phenomenal and cause for great excitement around the city.
Isn't that incredible? You know, the Blue Jays were 50-51 at one point, and at that point in time, they would have had to have gone 40-21 the rest of the way to make it to 90 wins. They have gone 26-6, which is just unbecredible. And like you said, they don't even have to play 500 ball the rest of the way to get to 90 wins.
And really, there's no reason to think that they're going to slow down. I know that the current win rate probably isn't quite sustainable. But,
yeah, probably not quite.
Probably not quite. But it's really remarkable to think that this team would play under 500 ball. To me, is just completely unrealistic as well. So it's just a incredibly exciting time. And I just want to also touch on just the, you know, you were saying earlier, the Orioles series is sold out. I think most of the series actually from here on out are sold out. And, you know, the people call them bandwagon fans, but I just love the fact that we're seeing all these people filling up the ballpark, showing Rodgers that if they put a winning team on the field, that we'll come out in droves and we'll support this team and we'll fill up the stands and we'll cheer the heck out of that place.
Yeah, and there's no question about that. The people have most certainly proven that, Mitch. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Yeah, if you build it, they will come. It's been built and they're here. The Blue Jays could finish the season with 23 sellouts in their last 24 home dates in the regular season. And there's no question that every single playoff game is going to be sold out as well. Mark in Georgetown. Mark, you're up next.
Hey, Mike, great to talk to you.
Thank you for calling.
Well, that's great. Listen, I just the thought came to me as we were watching Ari with his performance tonight. He threw, I think you said, 92 pitches.
Yep.
And I remember a couple of years back, Roy Halladay threw a complete game, and I think he was at 97 or 98 pitches and was absolutely dominant. And I'm just wondering, is it a pertinent stat, least number of pitches for a complete game for a Blue Jay starter since 1977? Or
well,
I just think it was
such a
remarkable game tonight.
It was a remarkable game tonight. And the truth of the matter is I have no idea what the lowest number of pitches in a complete game for a Blue Jay starter in club history is. And I would I would think that that is something that is impossible to know. That number was not kept so well until recently. Well, maybe not recently, but I don't think you can go back to the 70s and early 80s to see how many pitches people threw in a complete game. So we may never know, but this was outstanding. And, yeah, Roy Halladay shut out the Royals 4-0 on June 7th of 2009, a 97-pitch complete game. And he gave up 7 hits in that game. And R.A. Dickey only gave up 4 tonight. It was incredible. This was a fantastic outing, and I was really hoping that he would throw that 1-2-3 ninth. He did it the hard way. He got a double play, but to have 8 out of 9 perfect innings, especially tonight, September 2nd, 1990, of course, 25 years ago, was when Dave Steeb threw the only no-hitter in Blue Jays franchise history, and R.A. Dickey came close, but for one inning. He was really, really cruising tonight. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the call. Got a lot to get to. So let's go to Jeff in Hamilton. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Good. I just wanted to comment on Gibby's decision to let Toley hit in the bottom of the eighth. I thought that was really classy that Dickey was going great and was, 2 on, bottom of the eighth. He could have easily pinch hit for Toley.
He wasn't going to pitch it for Toley if Dickey was
Toley
coming out of the ninth.
Because he knew that Dickey was going to pitch the ninth.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really classy on Gibbons' part to put his faith in his players. Oh. And I think that this team is really special. And I'm really looking forward. I mean, I love what we're doing in 2015, but I can't wait for 2016. Because if I'm not mistaken, 1 through 9... plus the extras are all under contract. Am I correct?
How about we enjoy 2015? Huh? I mean, you should. Nobody.
I love 2015.
Nobody should be looking past 2015.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah, this team is set up well for the future.
2016 could be a record-setting year for this club.
This team is good enough to win the World Series right now. Okay, let's not worry about if they're going to be better next year or not. 2016 should be a lot of fun. It's true, the whole starting lineup is coming back. They're going to need some work on the pitching staff. But I don't want to talk about 2016. I don't want to talk about 2018. I don't want to talk about anything but this, because we should all be reveling in this. We've been waiting for it for more than 2 decades to have a team this good here in Toronto. Please don't look past it. And hope for better stuff in the future. But I'm glad you're enjoying it. Thank you for the call. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Keith is in Guelph. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Mr. Mikey. Just wanted to say, you know, with the way the team's playing, what do you think about Travis coming back at that point in time?
What point
and,
in time?
Sorry?
At what point in time?
When he's healed, because he is, it's possible for him to come back yet.
It is possible, yeah. It seems like it's unlikely at this point, but it is definitely possible.
Okay, so, and I'm gonna add on with Stroman to that point. As far as, you got a team that's just being a reckless crew here, to put them back in if they do come back, and it sounds like Marcus is going to come back. At some point, but to put them back into, or either one of them, to put them back into a regular role, just as at the snap of your fingertips, to say, okay, now you're ready to go. Would you think that that's a good idea, or is it something more gradual in lighter spots to put them back in once they are ready to go?
You know, you go either way on that, right? Because clearly, you don't want to upset what's an incredible winning formula. And the Blue Jays, again, 26-6 over their last 32 games, which is just silly. But they're better than what you got, right? I mean, Marcus Stroman was going to be the opening day starter for this team. Marcus Stroman has an unbelievable repertoire of tremendous stuff, great command. And he says he's been working on the changeup all summer, and now it's a much better weapon for him, which is, I mean, it's just going to make him that much more silly. So, yeah, if Marcus Stroman is ready, I throw him right into the fire. If Drevin Travis is healthy and ready, and the problem is going to be getting him at bats, that's going to be the thing, because the minor league seasons are going to be over in a week, and he's not ready, it looks like, to come back and start playing yet. So it may be the same situation as with Michael Saunders, where there just wasn't enough time. And they had to shut him down. That may happen with Travis. If it doesn't, and I hope it doesn't, then you got to find him at bats. You got to get him in instructional league down in Florida and get him at bats. And it's going to be tough to raise a level of competition. So I think for him, he is someone that you have to work in more slowly. But if he gets to the point where he's ready to go, you throw him in there because he's really, really good. I mean, he was going to be... he had an historic April, and hit when he came back as well from the first injury. So, yeah, I if they're ready to go, I have no problem with just throwing them right back in.
What would you do with Goins then?
That's the problem because Goins continues to do really, really, really well, and I don't think it's something that we're going to have to worry about because honestly. Reading between the lines and all the hints we're getting, it doesn't seem like Devin Travis is going to be able to come back this year, which is unfortunate. But you see what's happened. You see what's going on if he actually does, how Goins is doing when Travis comes back ready, and you figure things out from there.
Now, with what we brought up from the minors with Toley coming up and Pompey and those guys, where do you see like those guys actually fitting in?
Well, totally.
As time goes on, is it going to be like as needed, or is it going to be like there's got to be a tough spot in there or an easy spot in there for them to come?
No,
contribute. Or what do you think?
You use them when you need them, and that's it. I mean, the starters are the starters. The team is the team, and Dalton Pompey does have a chance to be the Blue Jays' fourth outfielder on the playoff roster. I think he's a better weapon than Ezekiel Carrera, both on the bases and defensively, and the way he's swinging the bat in the minor leagues, offensively as well. So I think that could happen, but I don't think that. You know, Josh Toley is up here to catch R.A. Dickey. Ryan Tepera and Jeff Francis and Aaron Looper up here to help out in the bullpen, not to take any major roles or anything like that. They'll be used as needed. But I don't think anyone is going to work hard to try to find, we got to use this guy here or we have to get him in. They'll play when they're needed, but that's it. I mean, they're here to help and accentuate what's already on this team. Thanks for the call, Keith. We'll take some more of your calls, but we're going to step away for a second because R.A. Dickey, spectacular. Complete game four-hitter on just 92 pitches, and Barry Davis caught up with him after the game.
Well, R.A., you've talked about how things tend to even out during the course of the season. You're now 7-0 since the All-Star break. You got your record back to 10-10. How good did you feel tonight?
I felt really good. You know, I knew in the bullpen that I had a pretty good one. Pete and I were kind of talking about it, and I knew if I could attack the strike zone all night that good things were probably going to happen. I had that little bit of hiccup there in the fourth, but outside of that, I felt pretty much in command all night.
You had some success with your fastball early in the game. Was this because of the type of team you're facing?
Yeah, they are a team that is patient. I think they lead the league in take percentage. So when I know that ahead of time, I can strategize a little bit and attack the zone with my fastball a little more than I normally do, and tonight it worked.
We've marveled over Josh Donaldson all season long, but what can you say about a guy who scores from third on a sacrifice fly to second baseman, makes a double to single? He just played his butt off tonight.
He's a superhero. I mean, I don't know what else to say. He's a special player, and he does something special just about every night we come to the park. So it's fun to be on a team with a guy like that for sure.
One final question. Russell Martin said the other day, if this doesn't have the feel of a championship team, I don't know what does. Do you concur?
Yeah, it's a really good feeling in the clubhouse. Guys are really enjoying one another. We got a lot in common in there, and it just makes it fun to come to the park every day when you know you're playing for something. And the crowd and the fans have been so fantastic, and they've been waiting on this for a long time. I know when I came in 13, you know, this was the hope. And it took us a little while, but we're right there.
All right, thank you very much. Congratulations.
You're welcome.
There he is, R.A. Dickey. And R.A. Dickey was perfect tonight in the first, second, third, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. In the ninth, he gave up a single that was erased on a double play and faced the minimum. And in the fourth, he gave up a run on three hits. It was a tremendous evening for R.A. Dickey, a 92-pitch complete game. And the Blue Jays beat the Indians 5-1. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Jays Talk. Back to the phones. Sean is in Toronto. Hello, Sean.
How are you, Mike? Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
First off, I just wanted to say thanks to Pat Henke for stopping by. You know, the Jays faithful. We love that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just wanted to commend Dickey on what a great game he threw. He definitely showed us all why he's a Cy Young winner tonight.
He was fantastic. Yeah, can't say enough about what he did tonight.
It was just great to watch. And, like, I'm at almost every game. I'm a season ticket holder, and I just love the electricity in the building. Something I haven't seen for a long, long time. And I just wanted to get your take on how Revere's doing in the one spot. He's looked very good since they made the lineup adjustment with Tulo going to five and him going to one.
Well, Revere looked even better before, you know, when he was something like 17 for 33 or something. He's since he moved to the leadoff spot, he's been fine. He was 0 for 4 with a walk and then 2 for 5, 1 for 4 tonight, 2 for 4. So, yeah, he's been fine. Tulowitzki was 1 for 4, 1 for 3, 1 for 4, 2 for 3. For me, it's not about the spot. I don't believe that the place you hit in the batting order dictates what you do offensively because you're only going to hit in that spot once, right? Troy Tulowitzki led off two innings tonight, and he grounded out once, and he got a single once. Ben Revere led off two innings tonight, and he singled once, and he grounded out the other time. For me, it's about getting the best hitters as many opportunities as possible. And the higher you hit in the lineup, the more opportunities you're going to get. And as the game continues, the more chances you're going to get to do damage, the more chances you're going to come up with runners on base. And for me, Troy Tulowitzki, who has been a great hitter for his entire major league career, with the exception of the last 6 weeks, should be coming up in those big run-producing spots late in games before Ben Revere is. Ben Revere is a lovely hitter. He is. I've never had a bad word to say about Ben Revere, but he's a guy who is a phenomenal weapon at the bottom of a lineup that's as power-packed as these Blue Jays. Now, John Gibbons has said he wants to get Troy Tulowitzki going, so he's moving him a little bit lower in the lineup. And it's, I don't know, maybe it's starting. He got a couple of hits today, and he's got three hits in his last four at-bats. So that's kind of swell. But once he starts to hit like Troy Tulowitzki can hit, he'll go back to the top of the lineup.
Absolutely. And just one more thing before you let me go, Mike. I just want to say great running on the baseline yesterday from Pompey. It was really nice to see him. I grew up playing sports in Mississauga. I played football, but, you know, it's good to see Ontario kid back in the league. And, wow, wasn't he something special to watch last night on the base pass?
Yeah, it was. It was. Thanks for the call, Sean. Appreciate it. It was really, you know, he gets in, pinch runs, tie game, steals second, steals third, like nobody's business, against a great throwing catcher in Yan Gomes. And hopefully that's an asset. You know, I've been talking about Roman Fields all year long, hoping the Blue Jays would make him a September call-up to do just that. I'd still like them to call him up because you could have two of them, and how great would that be? But I think we might see Dalton Pompey doing that the rest of this month and into October as well. Josh Donaldson, 3 for 4 with a couple of doubles, 3 RBIs, and a mad dash home on a pop-up to shallow center that was caught by the second baseman. He spoke to the media after the game.
First time you've ever scored on a sacrifice pop-up?
On a pop-up?
Yeah, second baseman.
Okay, yeah, I think so. I don't know, it was crazy.
Can you describe what you saw there, like in terms of the angle to take?
Well, I mean, from my read right there, if the right fielder probably would have caught the ball, I would have stayed. But, you know, Kipnis has a pretty good arm, but he was moving back, and I felt like his momentum was carrying him back, which makes it a little bit more difficult of a play for him to have to throw home. And I just felt like I had an opportunity to score right there, so I took it.
On that double, you take the wide turn at first. What is it that you see that makes you decide to?
Well, I know Brantley has a really good arm, and he's accurate with it, too. I saw something where he kind of came up, and I don't know if he was kind of assuming that I was going to be at second. But once I kind of saw him pause, I felt like I had another chance, because when I took my turn, I was pretty far off the bag. And then once I saw like a little hesitation, I felt like I could take it.
There's Josh Donaldson talking about his mad dash home on that pop-up to second. It was deep second base, but it was caught by the second baseman. A sacrifice pop-up. And Donaldson scored to make it 5-0 at the time. Blue Jays go on to beat the Cleveland Indians by a score of 5-1. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. The Jays remain a game and a half up on the New York Yankees for first place in the AL East. Yankees beat the Boston Red Sox 13-8 this afternoon. The Yankees are off tomorrow, just like the Blue Jays, so it will remain a game and a half going into Friday night when the Blue Jays open up the three-game series at home to the Baltimore Orioles, who are just in absolute free fall right now. The Orioles did win today. They beat the Tampa Bay Rays 7-6 in 11 innings on Chris Davis's walk-off, but that's just their second win in their last 14 games. We will Blue Jays talk it up again Friday night. Not going to take any more calls now because I want to get this in before we leave. Again, Marcus Stroman, his first rehab outing of two. He'll pitch again Labor Day Monday in Pawtucket for the Bisons in their season finale. Tonight in Low A Lansing, Stroman pitched 4 2/3 innings of no-hitter with a walk and 7 strikeouts. Pat Henkin was on off the top of the show raving about what Stroman did. And, well, here's some tape of Marcus Stroman in Lansing, Michigan.
Just improve everything overall. Fastball command a little bit. As far as pitches, man, my changeup felt really good. Cutter felt great. Slider felt good. Curveball felt good. Sinker felt good. Everything felt good, man. I'm right there.
Looked like you used that changeup early in counts a lot. Was that by design?
Yeah, I've been working on the pitch a ton, man, all through this rehab process. And actually, I've been working on it with Sal Fasano down when I was in Florida. So it's made pretty good gains, and I'm excited to use that pitch, especially left on left, right on right. It's going to be a really positive pitch for me.
How did the knee feel? So you cover first there.
Yeah, how'd I look? Bit. How'd I look? Good?
Yeah.
It felt good, man. I'm ready. I'm ready, man. I've been through a lot this summer, but everything was to be in this position I am today.
And the first inning looked like you were pitching pretty quickly. The tempo was high.
Yeah, it was a little ant, man. I was just antsy, just getting back out there for the first time, but a little more calm in the second inning. Dialed it back a little bit. But yeah, I felt like I was working very, very quick. I actually stepped off in the first at one point. I was kind of like out of breath. I was like, I need to slow down a little bit here. I felt like I was working like barely a little bit. But everything overall, man, felt good.
So how about that? Marcus Stroman, I'm ready. There you go. We're off tomorrow. I'll be at Pitch Talks in Hamilton. See you Friday night.